And welcome into this Saturday night. Between now and midnight, it's a night for you to expand a little, open your mind a little. And I can think of no one to help you open your mind a little, or perhaps a lot, as she has mine, as our guest tonight. And we're so very, very delighted to have her with us. The author of On a Slight of Light, and the author of a lot of things that'll bring light into your life, Greta Woodrow. Greta, welcome to Open Mind.
Thank you, Bill. From the sunny south, we're looking for 8 inches of snow.
Oh, my goodness. There, what, North Carolina where you are, right?
That's right.
Up there on Rabbit Skin Road.
You've got it.
Well, next week you'll be in a warmer clime.
That's right, and with you.
That's right. That's what's going to be warm. I don't know what the weather is like, but we'll be warm. We should have a good time. And where is the scribe?
The scribe is right here.
The scribe is right here, Bill. Good evening, and welcome to Super Bowl weekend.
Oh, listen, is it Super Bowling out here? That is Dick Smolo on the other side, and we'll explain the relationship. Well, I guess we can say that Greta and Dick are man and wife.
I hope so. We lived together for 35 years.
Well, that's good enough for us. on the other thing, what is so interesting about these people, and I want to share this with the audience. It's been a while, Greta, since you have been on with us, about a year or so. What caught my attention was the book that Greta wrote called On a Slight of Light. These two people that we have on the telephone, and you're going to get a chance to experience tonight, were both themselves very successful people. Not that they aren't now, but I mean they were in the successful conventional world. As Dick was in the manufacturing business of clothes and things, Greta was an executive, well, I guess we can call you a headhunter or something, Greta, right?
That's what they said.
Just doing very, very well. And then something very astounding happened in their life, happened to Greta. Greta all at once realized that something she had never heard of was happening to her. And that's what we call that good old-fashioned psychic ability, I guess. Is that the way to put it, Greta?
Well, I guess so. I think I'd prefer to just say I'm a sensitive, Bill.
A sensitive. This put Greta on an odyssey, different but not unlike what Shirley MacLaine went through, which found her in the laboratory of Dr. Andrea Paharich, our good friend, up in New York. And you found out some strange things about yourself, didn't you, Greta?
Well, I found out that I was what Andrea called a channel, a word I had never heard about 11 years ago, and which today, of course, is a very popular word.
Oh, it's a biggie now.
Yes, it is. But when it happened to me, I'm afraid nobody knew much about channeling, mm-hmm. and they certainly didn't know about the extraterrestrial.
Well, if they did, they only had read Harold's books or, you know, watched movies or something like that. They didn't think of them in a real term as
exactly.
We do.
Exactly.
And do you want to, in your words, put down what channeling is? So, because the word is, and there may be some people here who don't know what we're talking about when we say channel.
Well, a channel is really a vehicle. I use an automobile analogy. Would you like me to go through that?
Sure. We've got a lot of new people out there.
Sure. Everybody drives a car. And if the car functions properly, well, the performance of the car will be governed by the skills of the driver. You get a high performance, an average performance, or a poor performance. And I ask an audience to visualize this as a mirror image of the human. You have a vehicle, you have a driver, body, mm-hmm. life force. Mm-hmm. And the driver is able to get out of his car when he chooses. Or he can even slide over into the passenger seat. And that's what a channel is. Being either able to get out of the vehicle, body, letting another driver in, or sharing the body with another life force, soul. And I'm fond of saying this is difficult, but not occult. To get the concept of the life force, mind, soul, separate, apart from the physical body. Our big message on channeling is you are not your body. You're just simply not your body. And what you're hearing now from Shirley MacLaine and from Jay-Z Knight is a business of separation of body and soul. Out of your vehicle. And this is what happened to me. And when another passenger came into my car. The passenger happened to have been from another time and space and dimension and galaxy. And that's how I met the Elgata group. This is what On a Slide of Light is about.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, their message was a very strong one of change that would be coming in the two decades that we're now living through. And so our big message now of change, you see, is just ho-hum front page news every day in your magazines and newspapers. When it first came about, we were looked upon as doom and gloomers. Oh, my goodness, all these changes on spaceship planet Earth, and the answer is, oh, yes. And they showed me what would happen. It's what I call their scenario when they said to us, look, despite what man can do to man, despite nature's plan, there are those out here in the cosmos who believe that your planet's worth helping in its time of great adjustment, and there is a golden tomorrow. And based on that, we changed our lives.
You certainly did. Let me back up just a little bit, Greta. You mentioned the Ogatans, and there may be some who may not know who they are. These are a group of...
These are a group of extraterrestrial intelligence.
Are they human beings, such as we?
They are not human beings. They are beings.
They are beings.
They are entities, not deities, by the way.
Okay.
I must mention this because I live in fundamentalist North Carolina. They are entities from another time and space and galaxy. And what they have that we don't is advanced technology and a sweetness and a lovingness and an ability, I might add, to see forward and backward. We try to help people spot trends, think and relate to what we're studying so that they can make decisions for a change in their own lives. Based on what the Ogata group showed us and what they told us. And what they showed us wasn't particularly pretty because it was a glimpse of the future that you can't forget when you've seen it, of earthquakes and volcanoes and tidal waves that buried whole cities and supermagnetic storms and floods and so forth. It was a devastation to a beautiful planet, cataclysmic change. But, of course, again, there was that promise that we would experience the brighter tomorrow, and so we address ourselves to that brighter tomorrow, because if indeed mankind is to live through change, we have to recognize that he's weakest in transition, so he must be prepared.
Prepared for the transition?
Nobody is going to, in our scenario, nobody's going to help them or be lifted off anywhere. They're going to have to do it themselves. So we address ourselves to this subject. Dick?
Yeah, I would like to add a couple of words of clarification, if I might, Bill, on the question of channeling. It's a most interesting phenomenon, and it has been getting a tremendous amount of media coverage for obvious reasons. You have a great celebrity like Shirley MacLaine, who has written a book. And
two or three books,
and has made a television special. And then the news media have picked up Jay-Z Knight and chronicled her life, both as Ramtha and as Mrs. Knight. And the one thing I would like to call by way of explanation is they are channeling Mrs. Knight and the channels that Shirley MacLaine uses, Kevin Ryerson, are channeling human beings who are no longer in the physical form. Discarnate humans, if I might say that. They are earthlings. Ramtha is a 35,000-year-old human being, Mrs. Knight says. And the entities that I remember from Shirley MacLaine's show through Kevin Ryerson were a Scotsman of 100 years ago and an Englishman and some very, very charming, discarnate humans. What Greta is channeling, and it is at very sparse intervals, it's not on command, and it's strictly in an educational sense for Greta and for those around us at Star Foundation, are another dimension. They were never humans. They are in civilizations in another solar system around another series of stars, a binary system. These happen to be in another galaxy. But it doesn't matter in the transcendence of space. And I might throw in that our culture, in shaping the realities of most of us, had no place within this reality for extraterrestrials. Our technology is so new, we're unable to find all of the cosmic bodies within our own system, so we certainly have not been able to find any satellite bodies around distant stars. Although from the Los Angeles Times recently, two astronomers have found a ring of dust that suggests the early stages of planetary formation. So we're fast arriving there, Bill.
The technology is improving, and I think that's because the minds are opening a little bit to the fact that Earth is a local phenomenon. And we can't look for the things that we expect to see all of the time. Question for you, Greta.
Yes.
Why did the Ilgatans pick you? Or did you pick them?
Oh, I did not pick them. I think their purpose in using me as a channel was simply as a communicator to make as many people as possible aware of the changes occurring on this planet that are going to disrupt life as we live it today. And in order to be prepared, one has to know the signs to look for. And that's where I think I have had some strength in addressing people around the globe.
Was it because you were sensitive that they were able to reach you? Were they trying to reach sensitives everywhere and you just happened to tap in? Or had they picked you out specifically?
Well, they had picked me specifically, as they pick all of their channels.
Mm-hmm.
They say they pick their channels carefully, and there are many, many.
According to our mutual friend, Dr. Buharic, Bill, there are literally hundreds of thousands of possible communicants on the planet from different civilizations. It's just a matter of being able to turn them on and communicate with them. And that was how Dr. Buharic's work opened up the possibilities of Greta's communication with the Ilgata group. I'm sure you discussed that with Andrea when he was on your program, did you?
We certainly have, and we'll be with Andrea in 2 weeks out at the Whole Life Expo, and I would imagine there will be some questions that will be addressed to him about it.
Wonderful.
And he freely talks about Greta and the amazing abilities that she has. May I tell a story about you in a moment?
Well, you can't do anything wrong in my book.
All right. I have a fascinating story about the first time that I met Greta Woodrow and Dick Schmollo, which I'll share with you in just a moment on Talk Radio 79 KABC. The first time I met Greta, well, I read the book on A Slide of Light, and there were some things in it about the moon, as I recall, that fascinated me. All of the strange things that are going on the moon and that are there that we're not told about. She wrote about it in the book, contacted her, she came out here, and we were having lunch over in Brentwood. And she looked up at this vase of flowers and just motioned to the flowers, and the flowers seemingly wanted to jump out of the vase. And she says, anybody can do that if you can get your system down to 7.85 hertz or whatever it was there then. But a little bit later, there was a word that you wanted to see if I could figure out what it meant. And I remember I borrowed a pen from the waiter, got a napkin, and wrote the word that you gave me. And I'll never forget the word, guys. Lahura, right?
That's right.
And, well, you wanted to find out if I could figure out what that word meant. It was a word that had been given to you by the Ilgatans. And I did get it right. It meant exuberant greeting. And I opened up the paper to look at the word again, and it was gone. It wasn't on the paper at all. There wasn't even an imprint on the paper where the pen had written on that soft napkin.
Was an attention getter, Bill.
It did get my attention.
You know, when you opened the program, you said to me you're a psychic, and I said I'd rather be called a sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Let me comment on that, if I may, because we also talked about being a channel.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, being a sensitive means being sensitive to frequencies and radiations, you know, that bombard us from all directions, from all people, from all things. So what I am is more sensitive, perhaps, than many others to these frequencies. And most of these radiations, you see, are outside the range of the five, quote, unquote, normal senses. And all of us receive them.
Mm-hmm.
All of the time. It's just a matter of tuning into them. And I do this, as do many other sensitives, maybe a little more easily than the average. But then again, I practice. You know, how to get to Carnegie Hall. when you can communicate as a sensitive, you can get to the heart of a flower. And that's exactly what happened that night. But then, too, we talk about being a channel, a vehicle, providing a body, a facility through which other beings from other parts of the universe can communicate. And I think that people have to come to grips with the concept that one has a life force separate, apart from the physical, and that one is capable of lending or sharing the body with another life force. And it's something that I do as regularly as brushing my hair. And I don't view it as extraordinary because it's just a part and parcel of my almost daily existence, and it's my experienced reality. But there is a difference between being a psychic or sensitive and being a channel. I didn't ask to be any of the above.
Yeah, you were doing okay the way you were.
I was doing just fine, Bill.
And this has created some problems. You've had to move. You've moved to this beautiful facility in North Carolina, but you moved there for a very specific reason, and it took you a long time to find it.
Well, you know, when you say problems, I remember when I do a lecture, I always quote the philosopher Schopenhauer because he said this so well. He said, you know, there are three stages in the revelation of any truth. First, it's ridiculed. Second, resisted. And the third, it's considered self-evident. Well, for 10 years, we went through the ridicule. And we watched and are still watching resistance. You know, people seek change and then they resist it. But now, by golly, change is becoming self-evident. And that made it all worthwhile now, didn't it? Because over these years of our job of talking about change, these changes have already begun and they're very, very visible. They are the headlines. You know, what was heresy when we started to speak out about change is now being put into the realm of orthodoxy.
It's a sort of a ho-hum thing going along.
It's a very ho-hum situation.
I
remember when we first came out to Newport Beach in California, 1977, we talked about changing climatic conditions. We talked about possible earthquakes, possible volcanoes. They thought we were lunatics. Now it's not a question of will it happen. It's just a matter of when and where. They never heard the words plate tectonics 10 years ago, when we talked about them. So it has been a very exciting 10 years for us, and we're thrilled to see this happening. You know, the last time I was on, I said, oh, God bless Steven Spielberg. He came out with E.T. and Close Encounters, and here are these words put out in a massive way for people to resonate to. And we've had a small voice just trying to get these words into the cosmos. Well, my goodness, look what's going on. Newsweek and Time and 2020 and the new. It's wonderful. And you don't have to believe or disbelieve or buy this one's story or that one's story or indeed mine. The point is, it's in the consciousness. And that's good.
I think it's wonderful the way you are detailing these things as we go along in the Woodrow Update, that marvelous newsletter you get. It's my favorite piece of mail every week. That you've had a chance to chronicle it as it goes along. You know, what the Yogatans are saying and what actually is happening in the world, plus the input that you're getting from updaters all over the country.
Well, it's,
you're still
it's
doing
a,
that, aren't you?
It's quite a phenomenon, this update, because we're now in 14 countries abroad and all over the United States and Canada. And it really began because people who heard us speak wanted to keep in touch. So we said, okay, we'll look up to the UFOs and down to the changes in the earth and backwards to old age wisdom and forward to glimpses of the future. And we'll share with you whatever we can. And of course, since we've moved, our research has taken us into so many areas in which Dick has been so splendid. And we do indeed put it all out into the updates, and people do resonate to what we say. Our new one coming up has a headline, Now is the Time. This is a big issue coming up because there are no passengers, as McLuhan said on Spaceship Planet Earth. Everybody is crew, and we'd better know what we're doing.
I want you to do two things for me right now, if you
sure.
Will. Tell me how I can get the Woodrow update. If I'm not already subscribing to it, I am, but, you know, I want the folks to know. And where they can find out information about your appearance next week here.
Oh, you are so nice. For the Woodrow Update, you just write to STAR, S-T-A-R, Foundation. And we have a wonderful address, 448 Rabbit Skin Road in Waynesville, North Carolina. That's Waynesville. And our zip code is 28786. And because we are a nonprofit organization, this is the way that we operate, you can make out your check for any price you like. Minimum is $30, and it's tax deductible, and we will send you the update for a year for your donation. As for the, and thank you for asking, Bill, we're very proud of our update, I will say. As for the workshop, oh my goodness, we're going to be at the Viscount Hotel right at your airport in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a local number, a 213 number you can call, 935-0891. And one of our wonderful updaters named Dot will take your call and tell you all about it.
Hang on, Dottie. Here it comes.
Yes, indeed. We are really looking forward to this because you are going to be on our panel Sunday.
That's right.
And I know that so many of the people know you only as a voice, and they want to see you in the flesh.
Well, I'm looking forward to meeting them.
Oh, gosh, it's going to be wonderful to be together. Now, I know that I didn't give the dates, and it is Saturday and Sunday, the 31st of January and the 1st of February.
A week from today and tomorrow.
Right. We will start sharp 9 o'clock, and we'll go straight through till 5:15 or 5:30. And by the way, our $135 charge includes your lunches and your lunch break and your coffee breaks and the whole 2 days. It's not a money-making thing. It's price so that people can come.
Well,
so do call Dot.
I want to give that number one more time, and then we'll give Dottie a chance to catch her breath there at times.
That's 213-935-0891. And thank you, Dot.
Now, one other thing before we get to our callers. There are so many questions, and I'll add them as we go along, but I don't like to keep them away from you too long. When you were channeling, getting your information from the Ogahans, do you remember any of that, or are you truly in a trance?
I'm so glad you asked that, Bill. There are two ways in which one channels. You are either a passenger in your vehicle, or you get out of your vehicle. Or there's a third way. You can be taken out of your vehicle.
Oh.
And that is with permission, which involves your free will. They have my permission to do as they please with my consciousness when they choose to use my vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning, when I was a channel, I was totally unaware of what was going on. Dick would have to tell me. Dr. Buharich would have to tell me. And the scientist would have to tell me. At this point, most of the time, I'm a passenger. I can hear them, I can see them. But I can't talk because they're using my body and my vocal cords.
And this is where the scribe comes in.
And this is where my darling Dick comes in and does the talking. Dick, why don't you explain it?
Well, one of the reasons at the beginning in the incipient stages that Greta was not aware of it was because she was being taken out of her body and being given lessons someplace outside of the pull of planet Earth, along with a group of others, terrestrial beings, earthlings, humans, who were also being trained to be channeled for the Ogata group. So that in the early stages of the channeling, which Andrea brought forth in his laboratory in 1976-77, Greta was more often than not out with the Ogatan people. And those who were filling the channel were there to educate Dick and Andrea as to what the modus operandi would be and what the end result was that they were hoping for. So that the channeling that came through that I recorded and that Andrea recorded and that we used parts of it on A Slide of Light was for our education while Greta was being educated simultaneously.
Greta, do you have any conscious memory of these trips away?
Oh, certainly. But I don't have a conscious memory of what they said while they used my vehicle.
Mm-hmm. But you do have, whenever you're out of the vehicle, let's say. And
most of the time, Bill.
Yeah.
Not always.
When you were having these the schooling session that Dick
schooling
was talking
about. Schooling sessions are very clear.
You do remember those?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Hmm.
You know, everybody talks about raising consciousness today and higher consciousness. Can I talk a minute about that?
You've got 3 hours, then.
I want to talk about consciousness sensory perception and extrasensory perception, because consciousness means so many things to so many people. And I want to give you my definition. To me, consciousness is something like a very small nightlight in a huge dark room. And as the wattage, let's say, of the light bulb is increased, more of the room can be seen in detail. Now, the room never changes, only the observable reality, according to the intensity of the light. And I'm fond of saying the universe is our room, and sensory awareness is the light bulb. The more wattage in the light bulb, awareness, the more of the universe opens up to you. So when people talk about consciousness today, they have to be aware of what it is that consciousness is. The very subjective thing, consciousness.
Seems to me that we are all in a very dark room most of the time under those terms.
Well, that's why I'm hoping that maybe some will go out on a slide of light. You know, life's very exciting right now. You contemplate a golden age just around the turn of the century, and you hope you'll be part of it. My goodness, what can be more exciting? I know that all of our activities here at Star are geared to helping as many as possible get through that change that we foresee. And it's now. Nobody can make decisions for anyone else. You're the master of your own fate. You make hard decisions for yourself. We're very fond of saying in our family, you know, there are no bad decisions. There are bad results. So make another decision. What's the big deal? Examine these theses of change. We've been broadcasting this, you know, with you since 1981.
Mm-hmm.
In our opinion, the current news and scientific findings all corroborate the scenario of change that was given to us by the Ogata Group. And if any of your audience agrees, then you proceed to what you're going to do about it. If you conclude we're wrong, then at least the decision to consciously continue in your current lifestyle without making preparations is warranted. But at least we say, do yourself a favor. Examine the evidence. We sure lay it out as best we can every other month in our updates. Don't back into an inaction just because it's an easy way out. We tell our people to make positive decisions, hopefully that we're mistaken and that everything is going to be wonderful, and we hope we're wrong. But we don't think so.
Mm.
If they agree with that, then the next step is to examine your own situation, the location, the services you depend on, what's going to break down in L.A. This analysis would help you decide on perhaps what you might want to store. You might ask how long a period you're going to ride out. I mean, is it going to be a day, a week, a month, 3 months, what? Or you have to ask yourself, is it possible that you won't be able to get to a safer, more independent ground quickly? Will you have to provide the even longer, tough decisions? But it's the first decision. I say, take a stand. Decide on your survival posture. And if you need one, implement it. Do you know, we have just completed an underground storage program here at Star for 100 people for 1 year. People who we suspect will come and go, not stay, to refresh, to refurbish, to learn, and to move along and help someone else. Bill, we've said this on many occasions, you can't ignore personal involvement because that's the first step to panic. Tragedy.
Sure.
And the purpose of a weekend like next weekend, where Greta is coming out to speak on Saturday and on Sunday, Bill, is to give a framework of what the thinking can be within the matrix of change. Everybody must make their own decisions for themselves, for their families, for their lifestyle. But it will be within a changing framework, a framework that is outside of the reality. You call it a reality box. It's outside of the reality box in which we live. And by taking an intensive 2 days and just exposing the participants to the different activities which will be going on simultaneously, it will help them in their thinking to recognize what steps they should take or they would like to take for their own selves and for their families.
That's right. We we also say, hey, don't limit yourself to things that are just risk-free. Because if you do, you're probably missing out on the most rewarding adventures of your life. You've got to re-examine your actions and reactions, and that's imperative for growth and for survival. And we are concerned with survival, with food supply, with clothing, with medical supplies. And I'm not talking a doom and gloom scenario. I'm talking plague.